In 2005, the New York Times first reported that the Bush administration had been allowing the National Security Agency to spy on American citizens without a court order in what became known as warrantless wiretapping scandals. And while public outrage eventually led Congress to take action in 2008, the resulting legislation mostly allowed the government to continue its bulk collection of Americans' international communications, and it was renewed this past January. But how does the NSA actually go about getting this data? Here to help us understand is Henrik Mölkke, an investigative journalist and documentary filmmaker who co-authored a piece with Ryan Gallagher for The Intercept that tries to answer that exact question. Henrik, thanks for being with us.
Thanks very much, Tanzina.
So your article in The Intercept focuses on eight buildings in big cities around the country. Tell us what these buildings are and what they're supposed to be doing and how our information is ending up in them without our, like, knowledge? I mean, like, this is a little unsettling. Tell us.
Yeah, so the first knowledge we actually got about one of these eight buildings came back in 2005-06 when a man named Mark Klein, who worked at AT&T's location in San Francisco, based on the article you mentioned in your introduction, was emboldened to come forward and tell the public what he had found inside his workplace, a secret room where the NSA, in cohorts with AT&T, was looking at the data passing through the fiber optical cables at that location. And so what we're adding to that story now are seven other locations across the country where basically they are super nodes in AT&T's network. They are buildings where a lot of data passes through. And for the NSA, this is an interesting place to be present because when you send stuff across the internet doesn't really care about borders or countries. It tries to find the fastest route. In that sense, it's very different from the old phone networks. And these eight buildings represent the places where basically data can travel in and out of AT&T's network.
So explain to me how a private network is how the government can connect with a private network, what I would assume is a private AT&T.
And this is, of course, what's controversial because these are privately owned companies' locations. It's not the government's property. And basically, the problem with the NSA has with the internet is that the same tools are used by supposed terrorists as you and I when we're communicating with our families. And if what they found after 9/11 was that they had to be better at picking up communications that moved in and out of the country. And so they put a system in place that had certain legal protections where you could basically, if you targeted someone abroad, pick it up on U.S. soil. The reason for that is that the internet has a sort of U.S.-centric infrastructure. And so a lot of communications that go through the internet, if I'm back in Berlin where I come from and I send an email, there's a chance that part of that at some part of the day would go through the U.S. Maybe there's a spam protection system or something that has a server in the U.S. And so you can never really know how your data travels.
So tell us, for those of us who aren't as close to this and some of our listeners who just are saying, wait, I don't understand what's happening. So if I use the internet and I'm an AT&T customer, what happens to my data? And is the government listening in on my phone calls? And are they paying attention to my web searches? What does that mean?
Well, what we found is that there are these eight locations where AT&T has facilitated what NSA does, which is foreign intelligence. So, you know, without promising too much, I think a normal citizen that doesn't, you know, do a lot of stuff that would be interesting for the NSA probably doesn't have a lot to fear.
So in other words, my conversation.
As journalists, for example, right? If we're communicating with sources abroad or even in the U.S., there is a chance that our communications could have been incidentally, as they call it, picked up because we are communicating with someone who's on NSA's list of interesting people and targets. And so what happens here is that what our research and our reporting shows is that the NSA basically provides a list of things that they want to find in this massive sea of data passing through these eight locations. And they target the connections between AT&T and other networks. And so even if you're sending an email, so, for example, I think WNYC is a customer at CenturyLink. So if you send an email through CenturyLink, if they don't have access to a specific place and your email is going to that place, there's a chance that that email has to go through part of AT&T's network. And then if you're at that location and you're a foreign intelligence service, whether you're an American one or a foreign one, there's a chance that that email gets swept up.
Where is there such a thing? I mean, this is a silly question, but so basically, if I'm calling a friend to say, hey, well, maybe not me, because as you mentioned, I'm a journalist, but if two people are talking and they're talking about getting milk and eggs, that's probably not going to rise to the level of something the NSA would be looking for.
Right.
But is there an expectation of privacy at all for any of these communications? Like, what does AT&T offer the consumer in terms of privacy?
Well, so what our reporting shows is that they're primarily looking at communications that pass through other companies' network and not AT&T's network. We don't have evidence showing that they pass AT&T's consumers' content in large quantities through this program. But they are looking for two types of transit, two types of traffic, basically, what they call transit traffic. So let's say an email sent from someone in Iran to someone in Venezuela. That's a very hard thing to do without passing through cables that somehow touches U.S. soil. Or they're looking for emails that are sent between someone in the U.S., let's say a diplomat, and someone in Russia, say. The problem is that those emails for a computer looking for those things look very similar to an email you would be sending to someone about, you know, eggs and milk.
So where do you see this heading? Because we're seeing a new wave of lack of net neutrality, for example. There are lots of rules coming about. And I think this is one of the issues that has sort of gotten forgotten about in terms of the other bigger issues that we're looking at. So where is this headed for the American consumer, for anyone who might be using these services and sending emails? Where do you see this going?
Well, so we based this reporting on documents from Edward Snowden. And so we know a lot about what has happened at the NSA and really a lot more than we knew just 10 years before that. So we know a lot more, and that gives you and me the ability to basically protect ourselves against both our own government, but also foreign governments, because they all do this. I think the NSA has what they have an advantage because they sit on the most important infrastructure in the world, but still they all do this. And so we have that advantage. It makes us able to, you know, make informed choices about how we communicate. On the other hand, you know, the legal authority that this is done under was recently renewed, and there's nothing indicating that any of this has changed in anything but small details. And so I think the NSA keeps doing what the NSA is doing, and we keep doing what we're doing, and most of us probably don't have much to fear about. But I do think it's important, and I do think that this reporting contributes to a critical opinion on these matters.
Hendrik Mölkke is an investigative journalist and documentary filmmaker. Thanks so much for joining us.
Thank you.
There's a lot going on right now. Mounting economic inequality, threats to democracy, environmental disaster, the sour stench of chaos in the air. I'm Brooke Gladstone, host of WNYC's On the Media. Want to understand the reasons and the meanings of the narratives that led us here, and maybe how to head them off at the pass? That's On the Media's specialty. Take a listen wherever you get your podcasts.